Word on Today FM.
Continuing our series of interviews with party leaders, with the interview today is with the leader of People Before Profit Solidarity, Richard Boyd Barrett. And Richard, Simon Harris doesn't want you, but I can't imagine you want Simon Harris either. There was never the remotest prospect of you going into government together. But who would you go into government with?
We want to go into with the parties of the left. And we want them to give up on the past mistakes of propping up Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments, because we've never had a left government. We've had 100 years of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
You've had Labour in many governments.
We had Labour propping up Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and demoralising their own supporters who looked to them for change and then found themselves getting the same old parties with Labour as a prop. And of course Labour did immense damage to themselves and created a lot of cynicism among the electorate.
But you would need them in the numbers, wouldn't you, if you were to form a left-wing administration?
We'd need the numbers, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are still below 50%. And this is the thing, there's a lot of narrative going around that it's inevitable they get back in. It's not inevitable. They are historically declining. And the last election, we saw a big surge for the left during the last week or two of the campaign. And we certainly argued that the left had the numbers even then to try and create a minority government, because it wasn't a foregone conclusion that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil would end up forming the government. They didn't have the numbers either. But I think one of the problems in convincing people out there who haven't decided, and many people haven't decided, to opt left, is that many parts of the left are still leaving open the option of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
But is that part of the problem, is that there's so many left-wing parties that it's between yourselves, and you have Sinn Féin says it's left, and you have Labour, and you have Social Democrats, the Greens claim to be left, and you have others, Right to Change and others. So that the problem is that putting all of that together might be perceived by the electorate as very difficult.
Well, they did in France there recently. Faced with the prospect of a far-right government, you had the coming together of the various different components of the French left, and they had a fantastic result. And it shows what the unity of the left can achieve. And I think that is possible here. I would like to see a united front of the left, clearly saying, we are an alternative to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. We're not propping them up. We're not going to compromise our principles, as has been done in the past. We're going to set out a different agenda, which is about prioritising the interests of working people, the less well-off, the young, the vulnerable, as against Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, or parties of the right, who tend to always prioritise the interests of big business, the
very
wealthy.
Are they really, though? I mean, does that actually stack up with the facts when you see about the progressive tax system that we have, the social welfare payments that are made by what you call the governments of the right? I mean, do they don't resemble the right as we know it throughout Europe, for example?
They do. Look at the actual results, okay? Despite claims of progressive taxation, the actual results are profits in this country have gone up by 293%, corporate profits, in the last 10 years. You can see all of the energy companies, the big supermarket chains, the vulture funds, all making fortunes. But we have a housing crisis on unprecedented proportions. Our public services are massively underfunded. We have nearly 700,000 people living in poverty. We have hundreds of thousands of the working poor. So the majority are not gaining from the unprecedented economic growth and the huge profits that are being generated by a few at the top.
Well, let me throw a few other figures at you. So we have 2,785,000 people in employment, which is an increase of 100,000 in just 1 year. Female participation in the workforce is at its highest. Long-term unemployment is at a record low. We also have things like the Irish people consider themselves the healthiest people in Europe. 80% of us describe our health as good or very good. We now have life expectancy of 82, which is one of the highest in the European Union. These things have always been transformative in recent decades. And indeed, even the tax revenues that you have actually referred to having gone up so much, which pay for everything, is that not actually the greatest indication that the capitalism that you so revile actually has provided the wealth which has actually been spent for the common good?
No, what it proves is that the workers are generating huge economic growth and a lot of wealth, but they're not getting the benefit of it. And that's the actuality here. The workers earn less but pay more in tax. The corporations earn a lot more and pay less. So there's a systematic redistribution of wealth going from working people in this country to a small number of big corporations.
Okay, would you fear that if you were to be empowered to take a different approach to business, that many of these businesses would leave Ireland, which would mean that we would not have the corporation tax rates and we would not have the employment that they provide?
No, I don't fear that. Because
why not?
Because they're making absolutely staggering profits here. Why would they leave them behind?
Because they can make them elsewhere.
They can't, actually. They are in Europe because they need to be in an English-speaking country and access the European market with an educated workforce. Ireland is one of the very few places that they can do that. And the fact that they might be asked to pay a little bit more tax will not result in them leaving behind the astronomical profits. I mean, at the moment, in real terms, they are paying about 7% tax. Not 12.5%, and not certainly not the 15%, because there are so many tax loopholes and allowances and credits and deductions and you name it. They are paying a very, very small amount of tax and they are generating huge profits. But working people in this country who generate their profits for them are struggling to pay the bills. They have public services that are dysfunctional despite the high levels of tax they pay on universal social charge. And most importantly, working people who work hard, their kids themselves many times can't afford a secure, affordable roof over their head. But the people who are selling the properties or renting them are generating enormous profits.
Okay, so if you weren't, for example, to have foreign investment in the provision of houses and apartments, can the state fill the entire gap? Do you expect the state to pay for all of the houses and apartments that are required to be built?
All the labour that's building the houses is here, okay? The foreign investors are just here to capitalise, literally, their investment. In many cases, that means they buy up, as they did with NAMA, land, and sit on it and manipulate the supply of the housing so the price goes up, and then they may build or they may just flip it, as they do very regularly, get another planning permission, the value goes up, and then they flip the property on, generate huge profits, but they have no interest in actually building enough housing for the cost of housing to go down. That's why I always laugh when the government say, supply is the answer. The people who control the supply have no interest in the supply reaching a point where rents will go down or prices will go down because their profits will go down. That's why we think the state has to intervene. And of course, you know, when this country was much poorer, we were better able to build social housing because about 30 to 50%, let's finish this point, about 30 to 50% of the housing in this country in the 30s, 40s, 50s was built by the state because the state knew the market would not deliver affordable housing for the vast bulk of working people.
But you do know why the state had the money to do that at the time, don't you? Because it wasn't paying for education and it wasn't paying for health. It was leaving it in the hands of the religious orders to do that. And that's very different to the situation now.
No, they left the religious orders in control, but the public still paid.
Not really.
This is the irony. I mean, at the moment, we still have church institutions controlling our schools, controlling our health services. And that's one of the reasons, in my opinion, why the health service is so fragmented and disjointed. Because, you know, one bit of the health service is owned by this group, another bit. A bit of the health service is owned by that group. It's not integrated. It's fragmented and it's half privatised. No wonder with all the money that's poured into health, it
doesn't
work.
And do you think that if the state controlled everything, that the delivery would be better?
Seriously,
given the amount of waste that we've seen in government, in public spending, do you think it actually would be better?
I prefer the word publicly controlled, right? Then it is accountable to the public and it has the priorities of the public rather than the ethos of this or that religious organisation, or for that matter, the prioritisation of profit, which increasingly with the incursion of sort of private health insurance companies charging astronomical premiums or seeking to make profits, you know, former beef barons who decide to move into human health to make money. You know, this is not the way to run a health service.
Answer the question I asked you originally. How much money a year do you believe the state should be spending on providing houses and apartments for people if you don't want the private sector making investments?
They're paying for them anyway through HAP at the moment.
No, you're not answering the question. No. How much would it cost
the
state?
Less.
How would it be?
Yes, because at the moment we are pouring money out in current expenditure through housing assistance payment. More than €1 billion a year, and the state gets nothing. And then there's leasing arrangements. More money into the pockets of investors.
That's a fraction of the cost of what it would be if the state was to build 50,000 to 60,000 houses a year.
No, every time the state builds a house, it gets rental revenue and it ends money that is going out for which nothing is coming back, right? Because every single person who doesn't get a social house has to be supported through housing assistance payment or RAS schemes, money that's going into the pockets of private landlords. If the state builds houses, it will get rental revenue back.
So but you are aware that in the last decade, the state has actually paid for more houses and apartments than any of these foreign institutions?
I am aware that the state is forking out enormous amounts of money to buy property. Now, I'm in favour of...
More so than these institutions.
But they're buying property built by the private sector. I mean, did you see what the Chartered Surveyor said the other day about how much a house is being built for by the private developers? Minimum price, on average, $450,000 for a house, $550,000 for an apartment and a suburban area.
And you think you can do it cheaper?
Without a shadow of a doubt.
How?
Because, again, the Chartered Surveyors helpfully break down the cost for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they show that the actual bricks and mortar and development of the site costs about $250,000. The rest is the profit margin, land costs, which are being speculated on by the private owners of that land. Then there's professional fees, there's marketing costs. Whereas if the state was doing it on a not-for-profit basis, they could slash all those costs, as indeed the Kenny...
Because are you confident that the state, where it does act at present, actually is efficient and effective in its delivery of services?
It would be much more efficient if it didn't outsource everything. You see, Matt, everything, even the stuff that the state says it's building, is actually not being built by the state.
But you know, that was the way in the 30s and the 50s as well. You know, in the 30s and the 50s, it was outsourced to private building contractors as well.
There was, you're right, absolutely right. Like, people like McInerney's.
Exactly.
But there was a difference, right, is the state said, we are building social housing, the state is, and we will commission you, based on a certain price, to deliver these houses. What they are doing now is they're waiting for the private sector to build a house, and then, or a foreign investor, and then they will buy a bit of them or lease a bit of them, which costs a fortune. And of course, the rents are astronomical.
Okay. You've been very critical of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. You say chipping away at Ireland's neutrality. What do you mean by chipping away at our neutrality?
Well, during the Iraq War, led by the United States and Britain, they allowed 2 million US troops to go through Shannon Airport when that war was, as we now know, and some of us said at the time when we were protesting, was a war based on a pack of lies about weapons of mass destruction, and nearly 1 million people died. But the Irish government facilitated that and was complicit with it by allowing those troops go through our airports. More recently, we're seeing Israeli weapons, which the Irish government denied, going through Irish airspace. The US military, who are backing the Israeli genocide in Gaza, are still being allowed to use our airports, even though they are providing the weapons that allow Israel to commit this horror against the Palestinian people. They block the Occupied Territories Bill for 5 years. They're allowing Israeli war bonds be sold through the Irish Central Bank. They are continuing to allow dual-use technology, which can be used by to make weapons by Israel, to be exported to that country. And they don't do what they should do, which is actually impose sanctions on this regime. And they do so because they are kowtowing, in my opinion, to the United States, to the European Union, and a project of militarization in the European Union, of trying to align Europe, including us, with NATO. Now, that's chipping away.
The International Criminal Court this week issued warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and also for the leader of Hamas.
Yeah.
I mean, was that not an important point to actually make, that there is great wrong on both sides, and that for all of the absolutely correct condemnation that has been made in Ireland of the way that Israel has been behaving, that we do not make enough condemnation, that politicians do not often enough condemn Hamas, which also faces these warrants?
Anybody's accused of war crimes should face those charges, okay? Whoever they are. But there's a deeper problem, which has nothing to do with the Palestinians. And I have a very firm view on this, and that is that the Palestinians are the occupied people under international law. They are also people that are subject to an apartheid regime, a crime under international law. They are also a people who for decades have been victims of ethnic cleansing, a crime under international law, and the West has done nothing. So they are the victims. And by the way, under international law, an oppressed and occupied people subject to apartheid have the right to resist that apartheid.
Well, indeed.
Even by force of arms.
So Ukraine is also at the moment partially occupied by Russia.
Absolutely.
When the Ukrainian President Zelensky came to the Dáil in this term, you and a few others did not stand and applaud him after he had made his speech. Do you regret that now?
Not at all.
Why not?
Because he's aligning with NATO.
He's trying to defend his own country from an invasion by Russia.
He's aligning with NATO.
Who else would he align with when the Russians are aligning with North Korea?
Well, Palestinians aren't aligning with NATO, nor are they asking for weapons. All they're asking is that the world...
But they're getting them from Iran, aren't they?
Hold on. They are asking the world to stop arming Israel and to hold Israel to account for apartheid.
But come back to Ukraine and Russia for me, because that's what I moved to.
I was the one who drew, before anybody else did, attention to the shocking double standards in this regard, that all of the powers that now refuse to sanction Israel for genocide and for crimes against humanity, and have done so for years, rushed immediately to say, oh, we should arm Ukraine, we should...
It's on the border of the European Union. Many European Union members are worried about the threat from Russia.
Oh, but they're not worried about genocide against the Palestinians.
Can we talk about the issue of Ukraine and Russia? No, you don't want to.
No, it reveals that the NATO's agenda with regard to Ukraine has nothing to do with the Ukrainians. It has to do with their geopolitical interests.
Would it be anything to do about getting the Russians out of Ukraine after an illegal invasion of Ukraine?
No, I don't think NATO are remotely interested in getting Russia out of Ukraine, which Russia should get out of Ukraine, and let's be absolutely clear, but I don't believe for a second NATO are interested in that. What NATO are interested in is expanding the NATO military alliance, and they're doing so in a dangerous way now, where things are escalating to the possible nuclear conflict. That is not a solution to the Ukrainian fight for self-determination.
Thank you very much, Richard Boyd Barrett.
The Last Word on Today FM.